Good morning, everyone. It's FBC Radio Live. It's Friday, September the 9th, 2022, and game one of 270 odd games is in the books. And John, let's just jump right into it because it was entertaining for a bit. I mean, the first half was close, but obviously the Bills ran away with it last night. Josh Allen, 3 touchdowns. He looked good out there. The Rams, however, did not. So I guess your knee-jerk reaction, are you concerned about the Rams? Was this an alarming opening night for the defending Super Bowl champions?
A little bit because of Matt Stafford, the information we got before the game that he had some procedure done in the offseason, and it didn't look like it really impacted most of his throws, but that's going to be a concern going forward. I'm more concerned with their offensive line. Buffalo had 7 sacks against Matt Stafford, mm-hmm. and not once did they blitz the entire night. They were sending 4 fewer rushers, and they just got to him endlessly. And look, Von Miller, I know we talk about Aaron Donald and T.J. Watt. They each have had 3 NFL Defensive Player of the Year awards. This guy takes a backseat to no one, and talk about someone who's huge in big games. So that would be the concern with the Rams in the offensive line. They got no running game going, which is something that they can lean on to set up their passing attack. They're not necessarily a running team that's going to put out 150 yards a game, but they do use it to set up their passing attack, and they couldn't even do that last night. So they were in a lot of third and longs, and thus the pass rush really clamped down on that Rams offense, held them to 10 points. So a little bit concerned there. It looked as if the Rams hadn't seen each other since the Super Bowl. Like, there was nothing that they could take away from that game that they looked really good. Jalen Ramsey was a train wreck out there at cornerback. He's generally considered the best in the business from what I learned after the game is against him was a perfect passer rating. I mean, Stephon Diggs torched him all night. So defensively, they weren't very good, and offensively, they weren't very good. So, yeah, some concern there, but they've got the Atlanta Falcons next, so they should get right. And Buffalo was very impressive.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you have to figure I think they said it before the game, but none of these Rams players actually played in the preseason. So I imagine there's a little bit of rust there. But yeah, I mean, you have to be a little concerned. You know, there's no OBJ. There's no Van Jefferson. Allen Robinson looked like his Chicago Bears self, which means he was essentially non-existent. You know, that can change, obviously. You know, give it some time to kind of meld and get together. I mean, these things don't overnight. This is only week one. September, you know, it's the 9th today, but this game happened, obviously, yesterday. So you got to give it some time to kind of gel. But the lack of I don't know exactly how many times it happened, but it felt like, at least the perception, or at least watching the game, it felt like the Rams didn't push the ball downfield. Now, that could have been a combination of a number of factors. Was Cooper Kupp just shadowed the entire game? He was covered pretty well for much of it. But going back to the Matt Stafford injury, is the elbow a concern? Is it something that is going to kind of hold this team back a little bit? And even outside of it, and I'll ask you this, I'll say fair or foul, John, because I saw this tweet after the game from Richard Sherman, and he was responding to Dan Orlovsky, who was, you know, who's very pro Matt Stafford, and not surprisingly, they were teammates together and they're probably very good friends. But Richard Sherman basically said Matt Stafford being Matt Stafford in reference to the 3 interceptions. And you know what? I think it's a fair thing, because that's, you know, look, when we talk about Matt Stafford, I was kind of getting a little annoyed with the, Matt Stafford finally, you know, they were talking about a pregame, finally got talent around it. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. They just inducted a guy, first ballot Hall of Famer, Calvin Johnson. And you're going to sit there and tell me this guy didn't have talent around him? And, you know, he's not the only one. We've talked about it, John. There's been multiple players, especially on the offensive side of the ball around Matt Stafford. And, you know, look, he's had a very fine career. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback, but, you know, the 3 interceptions, that's what you get. It's boom or bust with Matt Stafford. There's a little bit more boom, but there's always going to be these boneheaded mistakes that, you know, keep him distanced from, say, the elite of the elite of the elite in this league. And so I guess I'll go back to the original question. Is that a fair or foul? Is that a fair assessment of Matt Stafford?
fair, and good for Richard Sherman, because now he's an analyst, and good for him being truthful. And I think Richard Sherman's going to be outstanding at this, right? I mean, he could be like a Barkley or Shaq, a great player who's not afraid to speak his mind. And we've always liked Richard Sherman. I really do. I think he's a breath of fresh air. It's fair. I mean, he led the league in interceptions last year. He throws a ton of pick sixes. I mean, it's a very common occurrence. And look, and through the playoffs, the last two games, he won 20-17 and 23-20. It's not like he won shootouts. The Rams won that Super Bowl and the NFC Championship game 2 weeks before that because of their defense. I mean, Aaron Donald was a beast in both of those games. Cooper Kupp ended up being the MVP of the Super Bowl. I would have given it to either Von Miller or Aaron Donald because I think their pass rush was the difference in that game. But yeah, I mean, I've said it a million times. We both agree that there's four quarterbacks that have kind of established themselves as the four best. And then I would put Stafford in the next group. But I still think in that next group that I would take Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow over Matt Stafford. And, you know, is he much better if he's better at all than Lamar Jackson and Dak Wilson? I don't think so. And I'll throw Deshaun Watson in there. And I know it's probably verboten to speak about him, but, you know, the guy is an excellent quarterback. But Stafford's not in the same class as the guy he was playing last night, Josh Allen, nor Patrick Mahomes. And, of course, Brady and Rodgers, we both agree, is still kind of in their own class because of their brain. But, yeah, no, I think that's fair criticism from Richard Sherman. And good for Sherman for doing that. You know, Rodney Harrison does that, and I think he's a star on NBC. And I think Sherman's going to be very similar doing Amazon Prime games.
Well, he kind of called out Orlovsky's, you know, homerism, I guess you want to call it.
Exactly.
Yep. And look, I understand. I get it. They're friends. There's always going to be bias. There's no one in this business, in this world, that is going to be completely unbiased towards one of these subjects. It is what it is. So I'm not faulting Orlovsky necessarily. You know, I've had issues with other things that he's said before, and I am kind of glad in that sense, you know, that's being called out. But you know, no one's saying Matt Stafford's a bad quarterback and that he didn't deserve to win last year. I think we've talked about the difference between what the Bucs were heading into 2020 and what they needed and versus what the Rams needed based on obviously the team they had and having had a recent success and having gone to the Super Bowl with a different quarterback. They needed a really good season from a really good quarterback. And that's what Matt Stafford was. And, you know, like you said, despite sharing the lead in interceptions the entire season, they were still able to make it work. Now, can you do that in back-to-back seasons where, say, your quarterback leads the league in interceptions and you still probably not. That's not a sustainable way to continue to win games. And I think you're seeing some of the downside to Matt Stafford, the uglier Detroit side. I mean, this isn't, and we've talked about this before, this isn't, a guy that was completely at the mercy of Detroit. I know it's easy to blame the Lions, and look, they've had plenty of problems over their, you know, history in the Super Bowl era. However, he was still the one making the decisions. He was still the one throwing the interceptions. He was still the one making these plays that, you know, had a hand in holding that team back. So we'll see what happens. The absence of OBJ was, you know, whether it was just because it's the one game and there really hasn't been a replacement for his role and the injury to Van Jefferson. And then, like I said, the absence of Allen Robinson, this is going to hurt an offense that, you know, was really good. And look, I agree with you. I think the defense was a massive part of why they won the Super Bowl. This offense was still lethal and it didn't look so much that last night. And look, give credit where credit's due. Buffalo, you can argue, could potentially have the best defense in the league. And if Von Miller, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen the entire season, but if Von Miller plays the way he did last night, then this season is definitely going to be worth the money they gave him, at least for this year. We'll see what happens in subsequent seasons. But he did look really good last night.
What a player. I mean, seriously, like I said earlier, you know, TJ Watt and Aaron Donald get more ink than him. But really, as far as a big game player, I mean, look, he was the Super Bowl MVP against Carolina. You can make a case he could have been the Super Bowl MVP in last year's win over Cincinnati. Remember what he did in the 2013 and 2015 AFC Championship games against the Patriots of all teams, right? I mean, this is a guy who stepped up against the gold standard, right? I mean, he was possibly the best player on the field in both of those games. Marvelous player. Easy guy to root for, too. I mean, look, every player's had some sort of things happen off field, but he's a really charitable guy and a guy who just, he's a winner, right? It just seems like where he goes, he wins, and he's gone into good situations.
It's amazing to think that, and they brought this up on the broadcast, and, you know, he says it's one of his reasons why. I happen to think it's the 6 years and all that guaranteed money he got, but that's just me being cynical. But he said one of the reasons that he wanted to go to Buffalo, or he made the decision, was that he wanted to be the first player to win three Super Bowls with three different teams. And I'm starting to think, I'm like, I'm actually kind of surprised that didn't happen. I mean, it's not like we talk about it all the time. And obviously, Tom Brady's only with two teams. So, you know, we know that it hasn't happened before.
Give him time.
Give him time. He's going to win with Miami next year?
Miami, Detroit, and, you know, wrap up with Cleveland. Yeah, right. You know, help all the poor franchises. What the hell? Why not?
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, Ken Norton, I think, Super Bowl wins with multiple teams. Charles Haley with San Francisco at Dallas. I believe Dion also. Fits into that, and of course Brady and Manning quarterback position, which is, you know, damn impressive, especially considering they went real late in their careers. But maybe Von Miller in the Bills this year, where Curt Schilling was to the Red Sox in 2004. I keep making this comparison that the Bills feel a little bit like the 04 Red Sox, like it's time to break through.
Well, I was going
to
say, I'd be worried, Buffalo, if Von Miller wants to start a gaming company, just FYI.
That's true, too. Yeah. Is he going to go to, like, Vermont and look for tax breaks and, you know, and end up screwing them for $100 million? But on the field, Schilling was, you know, pretty awesome, without question. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, maybe Von Miller's that missing ingredient that puts this team over the top. It's still 1 week. And look, the scary thing about Buffalo last night is they had four turnovers. Now, one of those two interceptions, not Josh Allen's fault. I mean, he pretty much threw a perfect pass to Isaiah McKenzie, and it hit him in the chest and bounced into the Rams defender. But four turnovers, and they still won by 21 points on the road against the defending champs. That's pretty scary. Pretty scary stuff. But again, long season still ahead of us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I said, I you know, if you're looking at Von Miller, you're like, okay, yeah, that's nice. But is it going to be able to happen from now until February? And that's obviously the goal for Buffalo. So speaking of Buffalo, so obviously that's just a little itty bitty taste of what's to come this weekend. So before we get it and we start our tradition of telling you what we think's going to happen every single game, we're going to do a quick little AFC rundown because we did the NFC yesterday. So we want to talk a little AFC here. And we'll start right there into the AFC East because we're talking about Buffalo. We just spent a lot of time on Buffalo. Obviously, it's a division that has, for decades, a couple decades now, been dominated by the New England Patriots. That is not the case, or at least that is not the perception at this point. And so far, based on what we've seen this season so far, John, it doesn't seem like that's going to revert back to what we've known. It looks like Buffalo might have a nice opportunity here in this season. However, I caution folks to, and I know I joke about Miami and everything like that, but my biggest concern with Miami has to be their quarterback. And, you know, defensively, I think that they can manage with what they have, but you know, if they get solid quarterback play, they're going to have a pretty good team. You can say the same thing about both New England and the Jets, too. I mean, it all really depends on how much growth their young quarterbacks, or in the case of the Jets, if their young quarterback actually plays. We know he's not playing this week, and it's going to be Joe Flacco. But I'm looking at this AFC East, and I'm like, you know what? If these quarterbacks pan out, I mean, they don't have to be the best in the league, but I'm saying if they pan out a little bit, you're looking at a pretty solid division with Buffalo presumably at the top. And this season, I don't think that hierarchy is necessarily going to change. I think Buffalo is going to win this division, but I'm not sleeping on New England. I'm not sleeping on Miami. I will sleep like a baby on the Jets, but those other two, I think I'm going to reserve my judgment on what they're ultimately going to be this season, at least for a couple weeks.
Yeah, as far as the Patriots, I mean, I'm not very high on them at all. I had this tweet barrage yesterday. I think I tweeted more than you did yesterday, which is quite an accomplishment. I tweeted all my picks for the NFL, like every division, one less record. And by the way, I want to give myself some credit here because a lot of people give out records for all 32 teams. They have to add up. They have to have 272 wins and 272 losses. So painstakingly, I did that. So I'm very proud of myself. I have the Patriots going 7-10. Now, the difference between 7-10 and 10-7 is three games. And, you know, in the NFL, that can be 6 or 9 plays in the course of a season. So I'm not very high on them. But, again, I do think Mac Jones is going to be a really good quarterback. Miami adding, obviously, the pieces they did in the offseason. But you're right, Ian. I think the division could be in really good hands as far as the quarterbacks. And Zach Wilson is kind of the wild card because we really didn't get to see much of him last year. And when we did, he looked very, you know, skittish, to say the least. And I don't know what the coaching situation is in New York. You would prefer having an offensive coach than a defensive coach. But, you know, that's the Jets. I would take Mac Jones over Tua slightly. I just think he's a bigger player, bigger athlete. I'm not a big fan of either one of them. You know me, I'm into skills. That's why I love Rodgers and Allen and Herbert and Brady. Got a ton of skills too. But yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting division. Buffalo looks like the solid favorite. And then you'd see Miami and the Patriots battling for second. And look, that's why these first two games of the Patriots are huge. Both on the road, both are winnable against Miami and Pittsburgh. If they can get off to that good start, then, you know, they can build that momentum into a stretch, you know, from weeks 5 through 9, which looks like a soft spot in their schedule, and you know, they can build from there. So these first 2 weeks, very important for the Patriots.
Yeah, which in years past, you always look at September as an extension of the preseason. Mm-hmm. So if they got off to a 2-2 start, we obviously know there's always a segment of Patriots fans that are going to panic no matter what. But those of us who have seen the rinse and repeat era of the Patriots, we've seen those 2-2 starts in September. And you don't think much about it. You know, this is a little bit different. You want to see them get off to a strong start. It doesn't mean that they can't overcome a 2-2 start. I'm just saying that, like, there's less certainty in that. Like, if, you know, again, if the Tom Brady Patriots go 2-2 in September, I'm not losing a second of sleep, because I just expect them to have the number one seed or number two seed or whatever at the end of the year, and everything's all good. But, you know, this is a team, like you said, really has to take advantage of those games that they can win, because it's a fine between, even, you know, looking at last season, it's a fine line between that team being under 5 and potentially 11 or 12 wins, if you think about it. I mean, go back to the I believe it was the Miami game that was very winnable for them late last season to open the season. So, you know, again, there's other situations you can look at that say, oh, well, you know, these this, that, and the other happen, and you have 3 more wins, or this, that, and the other happen, and you have 2 more losses, you know. I don't think the Patriots, I think there's a lot of unnecessary panic around this team. I try to think things through logically. That's how my brain works, or at least that's how I think it works. So when I look at the Patriots, I look at a team last year who was 10-7. Now, how they got there, that it doesn't really matter. I mean, this was part of the NFL. Breaks happen both ways, you know, positively and negatively. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they're only 10-7 because of this. No, they were 10-7. You know, you are what your record is. So it's hard for me to figure that this team, who by all accounts, I think has gotten better on paper, is somehow going to take a massive step back and be this sub 500 team. Like, I still think they're, you know, their ceiling isn't, you know, the Patriots of old ceiling, but I don't think that their floor is the rock bottom like some people want it to be. I mean, people get up in arms about the play call or this, play call or that. I don't really care about that. I want to see what happens on the football field, because I do think that this Patriots team is more talented than what they were last year. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate to victories. We know this, John. But I don't think it also translates to the idea that this team is somehow going to be worse based on seeing nothing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, preseason's one thing. I understand people at training camp. But at the end of the day, the Lions went 4-0 in the preseason in 2008. That's all you got to say. And say, like, right, okay, it's not that the preseason and training camp don't matter. It does. But when it comes to trying to put together how good a team is in totality, it's pointless because you're not learning anything in that sense. You're micromanaging when in preseason. You're learning about smaller parts of your team, things that work. And like anyone who thinks that the Patriots or any team for that matter put any sort of complicated scheming in front of people during the preseason doesn't know what happens in football, because teams don't do that.
No. No, they don't want to give anything on film that other teams can use to prepare for them. So, yeah, I mean, the preseason, especially now where there's only three games and then you have a bye week before week one. And that's why I think you see the first week or two being kind of choppy. I thought last night's game was a bit choppy at seven turnovers and the Rams looked like they weren't prepared to play. Again, because every team's coming off a bye week after a short exhibition season. There's only so many padded practices and training camp. So the early part of the season literally does feel like an extension of the preseason. But that's why it's important that the Patriots, I think a 2-2 start actually would be good for this team, because it's a tough early start at Miami, at Pittsburgh, then you home openers against Baltimore, and then you go to Green Bay. That's a pretty tough schedule. Then after that, it kind of opens up a little bit because you do have two games against the Jets. You've got Chicago and Detroit in there, both at home. So, you know, you can build from that. If you go 2-2 in the first four games, you could be looking at a 6-2 type start, which, you know, midway through the season is pretty good, because that schedule does get tough late, you know, when you play Buffalo twice and Cincinnati comes to town and you got to travel to Vegas and Arizona, which could be an interesting trip. So I think that those are all, you know, important games early. And again, Belichick's going against the first-year head coach who's right out of a Wes Anderson film, Mike McDaniel, who I like. I just think the guy's a breath of fresh air. He could be the worst coach in the history of football, for all I know. But I think he's kind of interesting. And you know, if it works, now we're going to see more Mike McDaniel-type coaches being hired. Oh, it would be quite interesting. I like the guy. I think he's just goofy enough. Maybe he's going to work. I don't know. I would prefer him over Matt Eberflus, who, you know, in Chicago is talking about, you know, the black and blue division and we're going to be physical. I mean, right out of like central casting of a bad football movie. But, well, I mean, we'll see what happens.
I'd rather have some bad casting out of a football movie coaching as opposed to some hitter doofus.
Hey, watch that now. That's not nice.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. Anyone doesn't get that, it's a Seinfeld reference, but
you know,
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like I don't really care about the pomp and circumstance when it comes to coaching. You know that. I'm the same way with Sean McVay and Clay, all these guys. I'm just like, yeah. I don't care. Like, again, I've grown up watching Bill Belichick, you know, and Bill Parcells. Yeah, obviously two very different but two very similar guys in their philosophies. But I love the tack that Belichick takes, and this, you know, like I don't need the coach to be a character. You know what I mean? I don't need the coach to look cool in front of camera. I just don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need that to happen. I need the coach to be the coach. You know what I mean? If you want to be a player, if you want to go do this, go start a podcast or whatever, you know, and do something like that. But, like, you're the coach. You should be a little subdued. You know what I'm saying? And, like, quite frankly, I have no idea if this Mike McDaniel guy can coach. So that's why I'm reserving judgment. Like, I have no clue. Like, I mean, think about the guys, John, that get hype in this league for coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, outside, you know, I'm not talking like Belichick, obviously, like you can't help but hype him and guys like, you know, and I, you know, have my reservations about Mike Tomlin in some areas, but still hell of a coach. Same with Andy Reid. You don't need that. I'm talking about the new wave, the hype guys, that everyone's so excited about this. I mean, Rex Ryan used to be one of those guys and we saw how that worked out.
Rex Ryan.
But as a head coach, yeah. Though, but that's what I'm saying. Like he was an okay head coach. He was not who he billed as, and this is what we're getting with guys like. I mean, people were talking about Sean. Remember the column before the season? Is Sean McVay on pace to be the greatest coach of all time? Let's relax a little bit. Let's worry less about the personality of the coach and actually wonder if he can coach consistently and not get out coached in big games like Sean McVay does sometimes. Unfortunately, for him, it didn't happen in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I think his record's pretty good his first 5 years. We could say he's off to a really good start. I think the best coaching matchup of the season is going to be on October 30th. I've already marked it down that I've got to find a way to see this game. Mike McDaniel and the Miami Dolphins against Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions. That is going to be scrumptious because I think Dan Campbell's had sandwiches bigger than Mike McDaniel. That's going to be a fascinating handshake. I think poor Mike McDaniel may just say at some point, I give. I get it. You're 6'6", 270, and you're macho. That's going to be a great coaching matchup if we go there.
See, I thought you were going to say Brandon Staley, and I would have really laughed. But speaking of, that was a nice little segue into the AFC West because I was realizing we were going a little bit too long on the AFC East. But, you know, that's beside the point. We'll save that for another day, more coaching rants. But, excuse me. Obviously, the AFC West, we've spent plenty of time talking about. Plenty of time. I mean, they've been in the news since day one of the offseason. And look, I mean, I look at Kansas City, and I don't think they got better from what they did last year. It doesn't mean that I don't think that they might still be the best team in this division. I am picking Los Angeles, though. I think, and I'm nervous about it, though, John. And the reason why is because of Brandon Staley. Like, I think they have the talent. I love the moves they made on defense. I love what they're already been doing on offense and what I expect them to do this year. But I'm deathly afraid of Brandon Staley because he cost them the division last year. So it's certainly within the realm of possibility that he does it once again this year.
Yeah, in the case of Brandon Staley and the Chargers, let's preach less is more. Like, sometimes get out of the way, maybe do things that make more sense than gamble at every opportunity. And look, I'm not afraid to go for fourth downs. I supported Belichick. We went for fourth and two in Indianapolis. I really did. He did Tom Brady to gain 2 yards and end the game. Go ahead and do it. I was in favor of that. I had no problem with that call. It just didn't work, but that happened. But the thing with Staley is he doesn't need to do all this stuff because, Ian, we can make a case that, especially at the top of their roster, they may have the best roster in football. I mean, I'm not being hyperbolic here. They have 10 players who can certainly make the Pro Bowl. And again, the Pro Bowl is not the, you know, the be-all, end-all. But you're talking about an elite quarterback in Justin Herbert, outstanding running back in Austin Ekeler, two dynamite receivers in Williams and Allen, two dynamite linemen in Lindsey, the center, and Slater, the left tackle. And then four guys on defense that are Pro Bowl caliber players. You know, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson, and Derwin James. I mean, I just named 10 players who are all Pro Bowl caliber players. They've got talent up and down that roster. I can name another team that has 10 players at that level. So maybe Brandon Staley should just concentrate on making sure the defense is good. Let Mike Lombardi, grandson of Vince, so I always root for him, run the offense. And look, Justin Herbert, we're both huge fans of. I mean, we saw Josh Allen last night. Justin Herbert takes a backseat to none of these guys. So, yeah, let them play. And maybe a case of Brandon Staley might be better off getting the hell out of the way.
Yeah, and look, that, I mean, again, it kind of falls right in line with my my philosophy with coaches. Just don't be a character. Yep. You don't need to be a character. Don't insert yourself into the – just do what you're supposed to do, and that's coach and put your players in the best position to win. And I don't think he did that last year. So if he does it this year, then I think – I almost, for some reason, almost called him San Diego. I don't know what, you know, I got the Superchargers.
I always will. They're like the eighth most popular football team in Los Angeles.
Greatest theme song of all time, by the way.
Just it if is anyone, good. It
if,
is
if,
good.
If anyone ever wonders what it is, San Diego Superchargers.
it is.
No, so, yeah, I mean, like, look, I like the Chargers a lot. I think, you know, Justin Herbert, I think, it has an outside chance to have like an MVP type season. It's like, you know, all the things are there. Everyone's obviously focusing on Josh Allen, and you know, deservedly so. You know, he's the guy that's just ready to bloom, all that stuff. Herbert has everything around him. He has a good team, so you would assume that their record's going to be good. He has the talent around him, and he can put up numbers. So those are need. To be considered a MVP quarterback. So I like, you know, like I said, I'm going into the season picking the Chargers to win the division. I do think you're going to get at least two playoff teams. I'm not as big on Denver as some because, you know, not, again, not as big on Russell Wilson. I mean, you can find a pattern. The pattern's there. If I like the quarterback, I think the team's going to be good. It's pretty easy. But you know what? It's a tried and true theory, man. If you have a really good quarterback, guess what? Odds are your team's going to be pretty good. So,
well, you only like 1.5 quarterbacks in the whole.
No, I like more than 1.5. Come on now.
Well, there's Brady and about half a Rodgers and maybe half a Herbert. I'll give you that. That's who you like.
No, I believe. Well, here's my problem. Always kind of the root of my issues always comes back to how I personally, I think it's funny. Like the folks out there that are up in arms about the treatment of Patrick Mahomes, and I kind of mocked it a little bit yesterday. It's like these are the same people who in 2018 were trying to tell us in week 12 that Patrick Mahomes was on pace to be the GOAT. And he was already the best quarterback in the league. And now they're like, oh, my God, how can you disrespect Patrick Mahomes like this? Because I'm like, oh, God, the irony. The irony, John, is if I had an iron right now.
You're right.
You're right.
Well, yeah, you don't want an iron. Real George's, you know, modeling career for his hands, the iron.
His hands.
The hands. They were beautiful hands. I have beautiful feet. I could probably be a foot model. But that's a different story. Yeah,
no wonder you're a fan of Rex Ryan.
I'm a big Rex Ryan, absolutely, without question. That's my guy. But, you know, I think when you look at all of this, that division is going to be interesting. I think the Raiders take a step back. I wrote a column on, you know, overs and unders, and I've got under 8.5 Raiders because they won 4 overtime games last year, and they were actually outscored by 65 points a year ago, and they're in a tough division. So I could see them scaling back. I think, you know, Denver will be better with Russell Wilson.
I think stability, though. Stability for the Raiders is huge because let's not forget that they did that in the face of all the things that have happened between Henry Ruggs and obviously the John Gruden stuff. So,
Rich Bisaccia filled in nicely as the head coach, who is now in charge of Green Bay special teams.
Oh, the next person to take the blame for Rodgers' failures.
Yes.
your Paisan. Is that what's going to finally get you to turn on Rodgers? Is when your fellow Paisan takes the blame for them getting knocked out of the playoffs?
If they could just handle an onside kick and get a punt off, then I'll be fine with that.
If only. All right. So we real quick, two more divisions before we jump into making our picks for the weekend, because I'm eager to redeem myself. I did pick the Rams last night. So the AFC South, weird division. I think the Titans. They're only going to go as far as Ryan Tannehill can take him, and I don't think they can take him. He can take him that far. I mean, Derrick Henry's nice, but first of all, is he going to stay healthy? And second, how much longer is he going to be able to dominate? Like, forget about like Frank Gore for a minute, okay? Forget about him. How often or how long do these running backs stay dominant in this league? And I'm playing with borrowed time. Yeah. I mean, is that out of line? Am I just projecting too much? Because, like, I mean, it's not like we've seen. And here's the thing: I take issue with people saying like, "Oh, well, you know, excuse me, Brady's 45; he's going to do this." Well, you know, we haven't seen any decline, so I'm throwing age aside. But I'm running backs are just it's a different breed. It's a different element for them to deal with, and I just feel like with Derrick Henry, at any moment, I feel like this could be, he's just going to be just a guy. He's still going to be really good, but he's just going to be just a guy. And if you can't elevate your team with him being by far this elite running back, how are you going to do it with him just being a lesser version of himself? So I look at this Titans team and I'm like, I have no earthly idea what they're going to do this season. Not a clue.
They look like seed. A year ago, kind of a soft number one seed that's not going to make the playoffs this year. In fact, I think when you look at these divisions, you know, you may have teams that didn't even make the playoffs last year win their respective division. And I think that's going to be the case with the Colts. Look, Matt Ryan is better than Carson Wentz. He's not a lot better, but he's better. I think he'll make better judgments. I like that defense in Indianapolis. It's very fast. It's built for today's modern football. Offensive line is really good. And Jonathan Taylor is the running back now that's in his prime that should be, you know, dominant for several years to come. And to your point with Derrick Henry, I mean, he reminds me so much, and again, he'd be comparing everybody to someone else, but he reminds me so much of Earl Campbell. You know, and Campbell was one of the greatest running backs I ever saw, but he had about a 5-6 year prime, which is all you can ask for from a running back who literally gets involved in 300 car crashes a year. And that's, you know, obviously Derrick Henry, who's just a massive guy. I mean, you know, and a special player, but yeah, I mean, how long can he last, you know, with 300 plus touches and the way he runs? It's a big, big question mark for Tennessee. And I don't really trust him. He had opportunities to win that game last year, and he made quarterback in the postseason last year. Yeah. Really, I mean, you can make a case for that. He had three options. Like, his first pass was an interception, his last pass was an interception, and his first pass of the second half was an interception. Other than that, he was really good in that game against Cincinnati.
Other than that.
How was the play, Mr. Blake?
Yeah. Well, no, look, I mean, what do you, I mean, but that's the thing. We've known who Ryan Tannehill is for a long time. This is who he is. I mean, he has his moments where it's like you sit there and you're like, wow, he looks like this elite quarterback. But, you know, it's kind of like the Kirk Cousins thing. Like, they're empty, they're almost like empty numbers. And I'm not saying they're completely meaningless, but at a certain point, it just doesn't add up. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you see, you know, his stretch, you know, now his numbers weren't terribly great last year, but he's had a couple of seasons with really good numbers. And you're like, how does that not translate to more? And then you're like, I just don't get it. But that's the complexity of the quarterback position. And it's not necessarily about the help around him, because Tennessee's had some good teams. And as we've argued before, Minnesota has as well. So I'm not sure why my camera is super blurry, but I apologize, folks. It'll probably work itself out. But I am intrigued to see what Jacksonville's going to do. I mean, I'll be interested to see what Trevor Lawrence does in year two. Travis Etienne, you know, obviously, hopefully not being injured. So that'll be interesting to see. But, you know, this AFC South division is just kind of meh. I mean, the Texans could end up being the best team in this division, John. That's not like, and that's not like outrageous to say. I know it sounds outrageous, but it really isn't that outrageous to say. So,
probably the weakest division in football that they really don't have a Super Bowl contender. You can make a case the NFC East, but some people do like the Cowboys. I like the Eagles, but obviously the Colts.
In the NFC East, there's at least more of a possibility, I think it is. I agree with you. In the AFC South, I just don't see it. I don't see a path for any of these teams to win the Super Bowl, because I do like Matt Ryan. I just don't think – it's just there's too many good teams in the AFC, and I just don't think the Colts are that good. I mean, they're good,
right?
Okay, but not like Super Bowl winning good. So, all right, real quick, AFC North – another division that's a little, it really comes down to Lamar Jackson, right? Like, if Lamar Jackson is okay this season, then I'm pretty sure it's the Bengals division to lose. If Lamar Jackson is really good in this contract year, then you're talking about a division that could come down to the wire, and I think is going to be interesting to see, because I do like Lamar Jackson. I do like his game. I do like when he's on the top of his game. Now, I'm not screaming to the moon that he's a top five quarterback. I don't believe that, but that doesn't mean I don't think he's also a really good quarterback. So, but if he has a really good season, if this Baltimore team has a really good season, then I look at Pittsburgh right now. I just don't think that they're ready. I don't really know who Pickett is in terms of how he's going to play. Is Trubisky, obviously he's getting the start. So they could start 0-4, and that could be it for them for this season, or they could surprisingly jump out to a nice start, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe Mitch Trubisky was just needed some time. You know, maybe those 8 college starts or whatever it was before he got drafted was just not enough to get him going. So, excuse me. Ultimately, I am going to give the Bengals the nod and say they're going to end up winning this division, but I think it's going to come down to the wire between them and Baltimore.
Yeah, I do too. I like Baltimore. Again, it's kind of the reverse of the Raiders. They went 8-9, but they lost so many close games. Continually, they would go for 2 in the win and would lose. So, you know, those close games have a way of turning around the next year. And, of course, once Lamar Jackson got injured and missed games, they were a shell of themselves. They had more injuries than any other team of football last year. I think they bounced back and win it. But it's going to be interesting to see those matchups with Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. I think those are going to be really fun. Pittsburgh's defense is still pretty darn good. You know, they get some weapons on offense, and Cleveland, they're in a position where they're not going to have their quarterback for the first 11 games, but it doesn't really behoove them to tank because they don't own their own first round picks for the next several years. So I think it's going to come down to the Bengals and Ravens. I'll pick the Ravens in the division.
Yeah, and like, look, I mean, I was swaying back and forth, but, you know, I'll go with the team. Like I said, that was just obviously just in the Super Bowl, so I'll give them a
little. And your younger brother. You've got to support your younger brother. I get it, you know.
No, I don't know. I keep thinking we're about the same age, and I'm like, nope, we are not. We are not. So, all right, we got about 10 minutes left, so let's jump into these picks. Yesterday, obviously, I picked the Rams, and he picked Buffalo, so he was right on day one. But
Now I'm he because I picked the winner.
That's right. Okay. All right. Well, don't worry. This victory lap is going to last very, very shortly because I'm going to overtake you probably here, and then so on and so forth. It'll go over. So real quick, because like I said, we kind of, you know, we're a little rusty trying to get back into the timing of all this, but we'll start right at top. New Orleans at Atlanta. We just talked about the NFC or AFC South. This is the NFC South. New Orleans getting a lot of hype. I'll take the Saints because, you know, I'm not buying into the Jameis Winston as the guy that we saw for 7 weeks last year. But I do like New Orleans better than the Falcons. I just don't see the Falcons as having any sort of redeeming qualities at this point. So give me the Saints.
Total tear down and rebuild for Atlanta. Yeah, give me the Saints in this matchup. And I think they're going to qualify for the playoffs, but I don't think they'll touch Tampa in that division. Saints to win outright. And we're picking strictly outright, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So, yeah, New Orleans.
Next, we have San Francisco at Chicago. I'll be eager to see Trey Lance. This is going to be exciting, at least from a, you know, what are we going to get from him point of view. I don't know. I do know San Francisco, I think, as a better team than Chicago. And even on the road, I'm going to take the 49ers to win in Chicago.
Looks like a layup. I mean, Chicago might be the worst team in football, and I think San Francisco will get off to a good start and try to keep things simple for Trey Lance so he gets off to a good start. I like San Francisco.
Next, Cincinnati hosting Pittsburgh. I think we both kind of gave away our answers earlier. Well, actually, I did. Maybe you'll pick a surprise, but I am going to take Cincinnati, you know, coming home at home against an inferior Pittsburgh team. I like them to win this game. It'll be close, but give me Cincinnati.
Yeah. Give me Joe Burrow over Midbisky. That's pretty much the bottom line here. And I'll take the better quarterback in the Cincinnati Bengals.
Next, Patriots traveling to Miami. Now, again, I've been going back and forth with this. This is one of the tougher games to pick, not just because I'm a Patriots fan, but, you know, the reality is both these teams have a lot of question marks. And I think there's not a lot of ways to answer them to this point, you know, the questions that we're asking. So I think there's a lot of mystery involved. Flip a coin. I'm going to surprise. I'll take New England. I think maybe they, you know, jump out and surprise the rookie head coach. I do think they have the better quarterback. I do think that they got more talented this offseason. And that's what I'm going on because there's no guarantees that that's going to result in anything. But that's the reason for me picking the Patriots in this one.
I'll take Miami. I want to see how the Patriots deal with that run game of Miami, which I think will be much better this year with the coaching of Mike McDaniel. I mean, he was the run game coordinator in San Francisco. That was their calling card. They may not necessarily have the same talent that San Francisco had on the offensive line and in the running backs room, but I'm going to take Miami in this game. Although the Patriots, their problems in Miami have been more late in the season than early in the season, but it's going to be like 104 degrees down there in the shade. So that's going to be interesting to see, but I'll take Miami in this contest.
Next, we have the Joe Flacco revenge game. We have Baltimore heading to New York to take on the Jets. Nice little story, I guess, but I'm taking the Ravens.
Yeah, you got to like the Ravens in this matchup, although I think the Jets have added some talent the last couple of years through the draft, some nice free agent signings. But, yeah, Baltimore looks like a Super Bowl contender, so I think they get off to a good start and win out the Meadowlands.
Next, we have Jacksonville heading to Washington to take on the Commanders. You have Trevor Lawrence, we've already talked about, and Carson Wentz, who you mentioned before. I like Washington here. I think they have some talent on offense. Again, if they get Carson Wentz of a couple years ago, then you're talking about a really good team. If they don't, then, you know, we'll see what happens. But I do like Washington to beat Jacksonville, although I think the Jaguars are one of the more intriguing teams in this league this season.
I actually have Jacksonville finishing second in that division ahead of Tennessee. I think they can get close to a winning record. And I think I love them Sunday, not just you know, with the point spread, but straight up, I think they're going to win in Washington. Doug Peterson, new coach of Jacksonville, as the intel on Carson Wentz, it's kind of a revenge game for both of those guys. Didn't end well in Philadelphia. Give me Jacksonville in an upset.
All right. Next, we have the Baker Mayfield revenge game. Carolina hosting the Cleveland Browns. I'll go with the Panthers just because I do think Baker Mayfield's better than Jacoby Brissett, but really, I just don't care about this game at all. I really don't. I mean, John, I don't. I'm trying, but I'll for the sake of doing this, I'll take Carolina.
I love these revenge games, right? People talk about revenge games of quarterbacks that aren't very good. Like, yeah. You know, and look, even last year, if you wanted to qualify Brady against the Patriots as a revenge game, they're never easy. You know, there's a lot of emotion that goes into it. We're going to see a game Monday night where Russell Wilson is going back to Seattle to play the Seahawks. They're not easy because there's a lot of emotion involved. I'll take Carolina. I think they're, you know, slightly better than Cleveland at this stage.
All right, next we have Houston hosting Indianapolis. I'll take Houston with a surprise win. You know, at home, you know, season opener, Davis Mills is a is a pretty okay quarterback, although, again, I'm a big fan of Lovie Smith, so we'll see. We'll see how that kind of slows the course of this team down. But someone posted something recently on Twitter where it's like he had this, like, record with the Bears, and then as a defensive coordinator, he led this team to a 27th and 29th ranking, and then went to college and had a terrible record, and then somehow became the coach of the Texans. So so we'll see. I don't think either team really is destined for any greatness this season, but I'll take Houston in the opener.
Yeah, I love Lovie Smith's beard. I think he's, you know, I'm a very likable guy who's not been very successful since his first, you know, 4 or 5 years in Chicago. But, yeah, I think the Texans have some nice pieces here. And I like Davis Mills quite a bit. He could turn out to be, like, the third best quarterback out of that draft, you know, behind, say, Lawrence and Matt Jones. I mean, he may be better than Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance. We'll see. But I think he's a good quarterback.
Certainly creates a lot of great memes. So I'll give him that. So, Detroit hosting Philadelphia. I'm not as high on Philadelphia as you are, but I think we're both going to agree that the Eagles, I think, are going to win this game.
Yeah, me too. I think the Eagles are destined to win that division, although I think Detroit's going to be a pain in the butt. They were at the end of last year. They were pretty competitive with Dan Campbell. Maybe the most macho coaching matchup of the weekend. You know, Nick Sirianni's a, you know, hard-o, as is Dan Campbell, so that should be a firm handshake after the game.
Yeah, very, very firm handshake. Tennessee, the Titans hosting the Giants. Again, another game that's just kind of, well, it's fun for the teams involved, but or the fans involved with the, you know, whoever's playing. But, you know, the reality of it is I don't see either of these teams being destined for greatness this season. However, I will take Tennessee at home. Basically, I'll give them the home edge. And plus, the Giants, I got to see something out of the Giants before I start making a judgment of whether or not they've somehow managed to improve. So give me Titans at home.
I like the Giants in this game. I do outright. And obviously against the point spread, they're getting nearly a touchdown. I think Brian Daboll is going to do a really good job with the Giants. Daniel Jones was good his rookie year in 2019 and then really went downhill the last 2 years. But I like the Giants in this game. In fact, I've got them finishing ahead of the Cowboys in the NFCs. My two surprise picks this year, Jacksonville and the Giants, I think they're going to be better than expected, and I'll take both of those to win in upsets in week one.
Well, are you going to take an upset here in our next game where Minnesota is hosting the Green Bay
Come
Packers?
On, Ian. Come on, Ian.
Because I am. Me. I'm taking the Vikings at home. Well,
yeah, it's not a bad pick. I mean, they're a pretty good team, and, you know, Green Bay, we got to still see what they do in terms of their
Minnesota's confidence is any higher than it is before week one. Let's just put it that way. Like, think about it that way. The hopes and dreams of their season are still as bright as they can be. Perhaps it lasts for 1 week, and fortunately for me, it'll be against Green Bay. So I'll take the Vikings in this one, in an upset.
Yeah, they see the lines like 1.5, 2 points. And look, when they beat these games, are usually pretty interesting. Last year was a fascinating game, which Minnesota won. I'll go with the Packers. I think, you know, I think their defense is really good. I think Flo and Green Bay may have the two best defenses in football. So I think they may win this game, maybe a lower scoring game than anticipated. So I like Green Bay.
Next, we have Kansas City heading to Arizona. I'll take the Chiefs in this one. Again, although again, this is much like Minnesota, this is time for the Arizona Cardinals. The first half of the season, you know, they could be the best team in the league. So, you know, maybe they upset Kansas City. However, I'll go with the Chiefs in this one on the road. I think they win a fairly competitive game. I think it's going to be pretty close, but I do think this one out.
Yep, I do too. I think they usually get off to good starts anyway. I can't remember the last time they lost a game in September, so I think they'll get off to a good start.
Well, next we have Las Vegas heading to the Chargers to go take on Justin Herbert in my MVP bet. I'm not saying he's necessarily my pick. I'm just saying I bet on him, so I wouldn't be upset if he ultimately won. This is going to be a fun game, I think. I do like the Chargers at home. I do think it's going to be high scoring, though. I think both these teams are going to be able to put up some points because we're going to be like, oh, wow, we saw these additions to the Chargers defense, and they still allow 30-some-odd points to the Raiders. Well, they're also going to score like 30-some-odd points, so it's going to be actually a really fun game. But give me the Chargers in this one.
A lot of talent on the field on the offensive side of the ball, as we've detailed. Also, great matchup for uniforms, Chargers and Raiders.
Oh, sure.
But again, you know, the Raiders are going to control the crowd because, look, again, the Chargers are probably the eighth most popular team in L.A. And I do really believe that the Raiders are still the most popular team in L.A., believe it or not.
Well, if they played this song, if the Chargers, that is, they'd be even more popular, I'm just saying. So,
yes.
So anyways, last but not least, and we'll save our Monday night talk for Monday. Tampa Bay, Tom Brady starting year 23. Did you see that great, 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 great intro by one Mr. Michael Jordan yesterday?
Oh, my Lord. That was great. That was
awesome. Oh, brilliant. Love it. excuse me. 23 seasons. That's absurd to think about. But anyways, 6-0 Tom Brady is against the Dallas Cowboys in his career. And I say, excuse me, I say it's going to end up being 7-0. I like this Tampa Bay team. I do. You know, there is some transition on defense. I do like Akeem Hicks. I think he's going to be a nice addition. I think you're going to get a pretty solid season out of Julio Jones. I'm not saying 1,600 yard Julio Jones. I'm saying 600-700 yards, maybe a half a dozen touchdowns. But I think he's going to play an important role on this team. And look, they're going to have a pretty successful run. And I think it starts in Dallas on Sunday night against the Cowboys. So give me the Buccaneers in this one.
I'm going to go with a slight upset. I think Tampa Bay eventually is going to win the division and get to the NFC Championship game because Brady can't help himself. He can't help himself from winning. I mean, it's almost like, you know, like some guys can't win. This guy can't lose. But I think it's going to be a rough start. Dallas will be emotional and you know, they're about as healthy as they're ever going to be. They always sustain some sort of injuries. But I kind of like Dallas in this game. But look, if Tampa Bay wins, it's not going to surprise me. And yeah, that thing with Jordan, that was incredible last night. And again, when you bring up that 6-0 against Dallas, he didn't even play in the same conference as Dallas until 2 years ago, and he's still 6-0 against them.
Yeah.
That, and they only play every 4 years. It's like, wow.
That's why he's the
goat. He's got more wins against Dallas than Kirk Cousins does. Yeah. He's in the division for 6 years and still in the conference for like 10 years. I mean, we could sit here for the next 5 hours and, you know, lob back and forth these crazy things.
Unfortunately, we aren't going to do that. We're actually going to say goodbye at the moment. So, no, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And hopefully by Monday, it won't sound so cavernous inside my studio here. So hopefully the echo wasn't too bad for everyone out there, but it should be good to go come Monday. And of course, tune in then because we're going to break down everything we've seen so far up to that point. And yeah, it's good to have football back. So thank you everyone for tuning in. We will talk to you on Monday. So enjoy the weekend, enjoy games. And just remember, fantasy football isn't real life. Have a good one, folks.